ಯಾಧುಭಿ ಸಹ ಪಾಂಡವಾ ದರ್ಶನ ಯಾರಹಿ ಋಷಿಕಾನಾಂ ಇವೇಶಿತು.
Is finished with the disappearance of the living spirit. Similarly, if you do not look upon us, all our fame and activities, along with the Pandavas and Yadus, will end at once. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Kunti Devi is quite aware that the existence of the Pandavas is due to Sri Krishna only. The Pandavas are undoubtedly well established in name and fame and are guided by the great king Yudhisthira, who is morality personified. And the Yadus are undoubtedly great allies. But without the guidance of Lord Krishna, all of them are non-entities, as much as the senses of the body are useless without the guidance of consciousness. No one should be proud of his prestige, power, and fame without being guided by the favor of the Supreme Lord. The living beings are always dependent, and the ultimate dependable object is the Lord Himself. We may therefore invent by our advancement of material knowledge all sorts of counteracting material resources. But without being guided by the Lord, all such inventions end in fiasco. However strong and stout the reactionary elements may be. As the name and fame of a particular body is finished with the disappearance of the living spirit, similarly, if you do not look upon us, all of our fame and activities, along with the Pandavas and Yadus, will end at once. Hastinapur, there has just been a most grand celebration of coronating Maharaj Yudhisthira and the Pandavas as the kings of the Kuru dynasty. The kings of that dynasty that predominated the entire planet. Certainly it was a great and joyous occasion. The natural inheritance of the Pandavas, which was for so long they were deprived of, they were again reunited with. And along with this coronation, the Pandavas inherited the supreme name and fame that can be found within the material world. They were the controllers, the emperors, everyone subjugated under their goodwill. And while everyone was celebrating, Krishna, after he concluded the ceremonies properly, he was about to depart for Dwarka, his own abode. And here, Queen Kunti, in her loving, heartfelt prayers, is appealing to the Lord not to go, because all their name, all their fame was exclusively dependent on his presence, just like the name and fame of a particular body is finished with the disappearance of the living spirit. Even if a person is greatly admired, adored, glorified in this world, whether he be a king or a queen, at the time of death, no one cares for that body anymore. That same body that was so wonderfully protected and adored and worshipped, after the soul leaves it, it is touched with fire and burned to ashes, or it is buried in the ground. The body has no meaning without the soul, because the soul is the source of consciousness. And whatever we love about the person, whatever we adore about a person, it is their consciousness. Because without their consciousness, they are nothing but a dead corpse, and no one has any appreciation in any way for a dead corpse. It is simply disposed of, whoever the person may be, however great he may be, as soon as the consciousness departs. So consciousness is the all-in-all of life. And just as this body, however great it may be, is rendered utterly useless without consciousness, similarly, for the devotees, their lives are utterly useless without Krishna. The consciousness is the enjoyer of the body. The consciousness is the doer of all the activities in the body. The consciousness that is the person, the life force that animates this empty, dead shell of a material body. And what is the nature of that consciousness? It is part and parcel of Krishna. Mamayavamsa jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. Therefore, Krishna is the source of all consciousness. All consciousness is emanating only from Him. Aham sarvasya prabhava matya sarvam. Just as the sun is the source of every particular sun ray, without the presence of the sun, there can be no sun rays. In the same way, without the presence of Krishna, there can be no consciousness. There can be no living entities who are conscious, because they are all emanating from Him. They are all parts and parcels of Him. Therefore, there is no such thing as consciousness without Krishna consciousness. There is only one type of consciousness in all of existence, and that is Krishna consciousness. Just like Srila Prabhupada uses the example, there cannot be shine without the sun. Therefore, we never say shine, we say sunshine. When we go out into the day, we discuss the sunshine. When it comes through the window, we discuss that this is sunshine. We do not say this is shine, because shine has no meaning without the sun. It is sunshine. Because we know, we are conscious, we are aware that the sun is the source of this shine. The sun is the all-in-all reason behind the shine. So in the same way, to speak of consciousness without understanding Krishna consciousness is like trying to understand the shine without the sun. Therefore, there is only one type of consciousness, and that is Krishna consciousness. When the scientists, or when the philosophers, or when anybody discusses consciousness, they are an illusion. Only Krishna consciousness is reality. Any other conception of consciousness is avidya, it is ignorance. And the living entity, when he forgets his relationship with Krishna, when he forgets that he's part and parcel of Krishna, when he forgets that he's emanated from Krishna and that he's eternally dependent and subordinate to Krishna, that is ignorance. That is illusion. Srila Prabhupada explained that Krishna consciousness is the original natural consciousness of every living entity. It is the only consciousness of every living entity. In one sense, everyone and everything that exists is Krishna conscious, because they cannot be conscious without being Krishna conscious. Some are aware of it, and some are forgetful of it. That is the difference between Maya and enlightenment. This Mahamaya potency, or Maya Shakti, has been created by the Lord to simply create a curtain which separates one's awareness from the actual reality and truth that is eternally our own nature. Aparayami tashvanyam prakritim virime param jiva bhuta mahabaho yagedam dharagate jagat. After Krishna explains the eight elements of material creation, he describes there is another energy. This energy is the spirit soul, the source of life and consciousness, and how that spirit soul, struggling so hard in material existence simply for one reason, because it has forgotten its relationship with the Supreme. Therefore, for a devotee who is aware of this reality, understands that he has no existence without Krishna consciousness. And Queen Kunti is explaining in this way that myself, the Pandavas, the Yadus, all our fame, all our activities, everything will end at once without you, Krishna. We are completely depending on you exclusively. And throughout the Pandavas' lives, this reminder was always there. And Queen Kunti, being a Krishna conscious person, was aware and grateful to all of the various wonderful ways that Krishna provided for them and protected them. Factually, Krishna is providing and protecting us and saving our lives at every moment. But because we are unconscious, because we are in ignorance, we fail to perceive that it is Krishna. Krishna provides the air which saves us from suffocation at every second. Krishna provides us the light of the sun which saves us from freezing to death terribly at every second. Krishna provides the earth and all the benefits of the grains and the fruits and the vegetables that are growing wherein, which are saving us from starvation at every second. Krishna is saving our life. But because we are not Krishna conscious, we have no gratitude. We don't even have awareness of the reality of Krishna's mercy. But Queen Kunti, she was fully aware of this. Although Yudhisthira, Arjuna, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadev, they were the most powerful, the most virtuous. Without Krishna's protection, they could have never survived. They could have never come to the throne of Hastinapur. Queen Kunti is quite aware of this. It was Krishna that told Karna just before the battle of Kurukshetra that Kunti is your mother, that mother you have always longed to know, that you have wept sleepless nights to know who your real mother is. It is Kunti. And therefore the Pandavas are your own beloved and dear brothers. Krishna knew past, present, and future. Krishna told Karna this, first of all, with the hope that Karna would join the sides with the Pandavas. But Karna was so honest. He was such a man of his word. Because he promised Duryodhana that he would help him, he could not go back on that promise. Even though he knew that he would die if he fought this war. For one who has honor, dishonor is worse than death. And the greatest dishonor is not to be honest when one gives one's word. Amongst civilized society, when you give your word, you must live by that word under any circumstance throughout your life. You cannot break your word. In Kali Yuga, there is so much chaos. There was called so much trust, distrust, and hypocrisy because people simply do not value the word that they give, the vows that they take in life. So in this way, Krishna actually used Karna to exhibit the extent a person can be truthful and adhere to the vows that he takes. But he also knew that if Karna were to fight against the Pandavas, if he knew that they were his brothers, he would not be able to kill them. Because of natural affection. Except Arjuna. The rivalry was too strong in that regard. So during the battle of Kurukshetra, it was very mysterious. Because at various times, Karna fought with each of the Pandavas and completely defeated them and had them helpless, totally at his mercy. Sometimes laying in the ground, unarmed, and he would put his arrow to their head, and they would be just on the verge of death with no hope of protection. And then Karna would just let them go and tell them, get out of here. And the Pandavas couldn't understand. He did this to Yudhisthira, utterly defeated him. Had him on the verge of death and then let him, released him. He did it to Bhima and Nakula and Sahadev. And only Kunti knew the reason why. Because Karna knew that they were his brothers. Therefore, it was Krishna that saved their lives. And when fighting with Arjuna, Krishna knew that in this battle, Karna would definitely win. Arjuna had no hope. Karna was superior. Therefore, it was Krishna that practically forced Arjuna by great pressures to shoot Karna with his arrows, a crescent-shaped arrows, and sever his head at a time when he was trying to remove the chariot wheel from the ground with both of his hands. And people could not understand. But if Krishna had not have done this, Arjuna would have died. So again, Krishna was their savior. At the time when Arjuna heard the news that his beloved son, Abhimanyu, was killed in a very tragic and unfair process, he took vow that I will kill this Jayadrath. He is the cause. I will kill him or I will enter fire by sunset tomorrow. And it was Krishna driving his chariot who was plowing through the armies from sunrise to sunset. Jayadratha was protected specifically by every particular soldier of the Kuru army. They had only one business that day: do not allow Arjuna to come near him. And as the sun was just setting, Jayadratha was still a reasonable distance away. And there were so many soldiers between them defending him that Arjuna did not have a chance. And if Arjuna were to be killed, the Pandavas were to be destroyed. So at that time, who was it that saved them? It was Krishna. By his great mystic potency, he released his Sudarshan Chakra, covered the sun, and all of the Kurus thought that the sun has set and Jayadratha is alive. Therefore Arjuna, being a man of honor, a man who will never break his word, will definitely enter fire. And they all dropped their weapons and they began to celebrate. And Arjuna was completely in a desperate state of lamentation. And then Krishna told Arjuna, now you take your arrow, specialized arrow, you sever the head of this Jayadratha. Arjuna couldn't believe what he was hearing. The time had expired. This was against the Kshatriya codes. But he did have faith that Saravadharaman Purityaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja Aham Tvam Saravapapevyo Mokshai Shamimasujaha. Krishna instructed him in this before the battle. You just surrender to me. Abandon all other conceptions of religion. So Arjuna released his arrow. Jayadratha's head was severed. And everyone was shocked. They looked at Arjuna. How could you do this? The sun has set. And then Krishna removed his Sudarshan Chakra, which was covering the sun, and the sun was there to be seen by everyone. And within a second, it set. And before the very battle, Krishna revealed his Virat Rupa, his universal form, just to show Arjuna and Pandavas that I am going to win this war for you. You just see, all the greatest heroes and warriors of the Kurus, they are all being devoured by my great form of time. So you have nothing to fear. So Kunti was fully aware that it was only by the mercy of Krishna that any of them had survived. And without Krishna, what is the use? What is the meaning? What is the purpose of their life? Because for a devotee who is Krishna conscious, for a devotee who understands his relationship with Krishna, to reciprocate love with Krishna, to serve Krishna, to remember Krishna, is everything. Without that, we have no life. Without that, we have no consciousness, no real consciousness. From the spiritual point of view, when you forget Krishna, you're unconscious. You're dead. You're in deep sleep. Deep sleep is the same as death, as far as your consciousness is aware, as your awareness is concerned. And therefore it is said by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that this whole world is simply in a dream. It is in deep sleep. It is spiritually dead without Krishna consciousness. Therefore, he appealed to his devotees. You go into the streets and you preach the glories of Krishna. Preach, worship Krishna, chant the name of Krishna, always remember Krishna, always serve Krishna and his devotees. This is life. Everything else is death. Shunyayatam jagat saravam govinda virahe name. This is Mahaprabhu's teaching, that this whole world is a dreary void. It is nothing without Krishna, without Govinda. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was present in Navadvipa, he demonstrated through his devotees and through his own activities of how useless existence is without Krishna. They would have beautiful kirtans in the nights, and Lord Chaitanya would instruct the devotees and the common innocent people to be chanting and dancing Krishna's names throughout the entire day. But there was always that class of atheists. And even worse than the atheists were the very proud pseudo-religionists, the pandits who had karmakandic or mayavadic conceptions and who very much blasphemed and abused the devotees. Even Lord Chaitanya himself. Just some days back, one of our devotees asked that why, when we're chanting the holy name of Krishna and we're living very sincere devotional lives, why aren't we being respected? People should all be kind and loving and respectful to us if we are Krishna's devotees. But in this material world, whoever you are, you will be abused, especially if you are a devotee. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his own devotees were terribly abused. So one time when Sri Gauranga was walking through Navadvipa, some atheistic people began to ridicule him. They began to accuse him of so many insulting things. Why you are doing all this chanting, dancing? What are you gaining from it? They were sarcastically accusing him of being a demigod worshipper and everything else. Why you have to chant so loudly? Krishna cannot hear you when you meditate on him? You're disturbing him. You're waking him. So many sarcastic words. So Lord Chaitanya knew there's no use arguing with people that do not want to hear. So he just walked away. And he came to Srivas Pandit's house. And there they began to have kirtan. He was very anxious to have kirtan. But after some time he stopped the kirtan. In a very, very depressed state, he said, "I'm feeling no bliss of Krishna consciousness. I'm feeling no bliss from this kirtan because I have heard the words of materialistic people today. Therefore, I am deprived of Krishna. And Advaita Acharya, in his own humorous way, he took the opportunity to make a joke. But at the same time, it had a sincere significance behind it. He said that you are not feeling Krishna because I have drunk all your Krishna consciousness from you. Today I have successfully done this. Why? Because you're giving Krishna consciousness to everyone but me. You're going to the lowest class untouchable people and you're giving them Krishna prema and you're giving them service to your lotus feet. And you're going to the people even who have no culture and you're giving them your loving service. In fact, you are giving your loving service to everyone without discrimination. But the Srivas and myself, you treat us like your superiors and you serve us and you never allow us to serve you. Therefore, you are giving everyone service except us. You are giving your love to everyone except us. Therefore, today I am going to drink up this love from you. And Mahaprabhu, when he heard this, he was already in a depressed state. He was not in a mood to hear such things from Advaita Acharya, who he respected like his own guru. So immediately, he just ran out the door. And the devotees saw he was very much disturbed state and they didn't know what to do. They were stunned. And he went directly to the Ganga and he jumped in and started going underwater to commit suicide. At that time, Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas, they were the only ones who followed him. And they realized our Lord is about to drown. So they both jumped in Ganga and Nityananda Prabhu, he grabbed the Lord by his hair and Haridas grabbed him by the feet and they somehow or other brought him to the bank of the river Ganges. And Lord Chaitanya looked at them and said, "Why have you done this? Do not you know that I have no love for Krishna? If I even had one drop of love of Krishna, I would be in such transcendental ecstasy. Unlimited, inconceivable ecstasies. But the fact that I am not in such transcendental ecstatic state means that I do not even have a single drop of love of Krishna in my heart. And therefore, what is the use of my life? What type of a sinful activity it is to even maintain this body without love of Krishna? The only purpose of this life, the only purpose of this body is to serve Krishna with love. Without such love, there's no meaning to life. I see no reason to continue living, to continue breathing. It is a waste. It is an offense. I have done justice. Without that drop of love of Krishna, suicide is the only resort. There is no reason to live. Why? Why have you taken me out of this water? Why have you saved my life? Why are you inconveniencing me like this?" This was Mahaprabhu's mood. Although he was Mahabhava avatar, he was displaying the highest ecstasies of love of God. Still, when he was asked, when he was in the role of his devotee, he would express that I do not even have a single drop of love for Krishna. He explained, if I loved Krishna, how is it that I'm still breathing? If I had one drop of love of Krishna, in separation I would have to die. The fact that I'm living means I have no love, not a single drop. Of course, unintelligent people these days, they boast of how much they love Krishna. Yes, I know Krishna. Yes, I love Krishna. Yes, I am a great bhakta. But the real bhaktas, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, these great souls, in their intimate prayers, they are in the mood of Mahaprabhu. Not even a single drop of love of Krishna is in my heart. Therefore, what is the use of my life? Sunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahe namo. So as Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas were wiping the dust from Lord Chaitanya's body, they expressed to him how, if you leave us, my Lord, then we have no life. Then all of your devotees will have no existence. You are our everything, our all in all. You must stay with us. So Lord Chaitanya told them that you do not tell anyone that you saw me or anything that has happened. And then Mahaprabhu went to Nandan Acharya's house for the purpose of hiding from all of his devotees. And when Nandan Acharya saw him, he was very happy. It was evening, and Lord Chaitanya and Nandan Acharya simply discussed Krishna Katha all night long, and Nandan Acharya was simply immersed in the ocean of ecstatic love to have such good fortune, such intimate relationship with the Lord. But meanwhile, all the other devotees, they did not know where the Lord was. All they knew is that he left in depression, and he was also offended by the words of his own devotees, Sri Advaita. So they were plunged, merged in an ocean of grief. That where is the Lord? Has he left us? Will he ever return? Certainly we do not deserve him after what we have spoken. So Lord Chaitanya, in the early morning, he understood the hearts of his devotees. So he told Nandan Acharya, you go and you bring Srivas here. So Sri Nandan Acharya went and brought Srivas. Srivas didn't know what was happening. He just came. And when he came to the house and he saw Lord Gaurasundar, his consciousness, which was practically dead, was revitalized by seeing the Lord. He began to fall and offer his repeated obeisances. And Lord Chaitanya asked, please tell me, what is the condition of Sri Advaita? And Srivas Pandit said, ever since you left, he has simply been weeping and crying. His heart is utterly broken. He hasn't eaten anything. He cannot sleep. In fact, all the devotees are in that state. We were all so much in fear that you left us forever, that the devotees, they cannot do anything. They are simply rolling on the ground, weeping and crying in utter desperation. So please, my Lord, you are our life, Prananath. You are the Lord of our life, the sustenance of our life. Without you, we cannot survive. This is the condition of a devotee. That without love of Krishna, without service to Krishna, we have no life. unfortunate devotees, sometimes, in fact, many times, for the sake of serving the things of this world, the people of this world, for the sake of serving our own mind and senses, we divert ourselves away from Krishna's service. To enjoy the entertainments of our own mind and senses, we sometimes willingly accept a condition of life where we forget Krishna. And we enjoy it. We become enlivened by it. It's a healthy break from devotional service. How unfortunate. A true devotee cannot bear separation from the service of Krishna for a moment. A true devotee, forgetfulness of Krishna is millions of times more painful than any pains of this body or mind. It's worse than death. It is death. This is to the degree a devotee considers the sacred opportunity of devotional service, his life and soul. But our misfortune is by the illusions of Maya, we are allured to think that there's something else in life. And therefore we waste so many opportunities for devotional service. And we enjoy it. That is the great dilemma. So these devotees, without service to Mahaprabhu, they saw the world shunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahename as a dreary void, nothing. And Mahaprabhu, hearing this, he went to Srivasa's house, and there when Advaitacharya, all the devotees were so ecstatic to see the Lord, but at the same time ashamed. But Advaitacharya was laying in an unconscious state in lamentation. And Mahaprabhu personally woke him up from his unconscious state of lamentation. He couldn't even bear to be conscious without Krishna. That was the nature of his love. And when he got up and he saw the Lord, Advaita began to weep and cry and beg forgiveness for the punishment he had received. He was so much in realization of his offense. And Lord Chaitanya, in a very sweet and loving voice, explained to him that it is because you are so dear to me that I have done this. When a son misbehaves, the father punishes him only because of love. Similarly, when a great servant of the king misbehaves, the king has to punish him to set an example, but this is out of great love. So similarly, you are my devotees, you are most dear to me, of everyone. And therefore you should accept this punishment as the expression of my infinite love for you. And Advaitacharya, upon hearing these words, he began to dance in ecstasy as he chanted the holy names of Krishna and the glories of Mahaprabhu. We were hearing the other day when Srila Prabhupada was on his journey of the Jaladuta. The Atlantic Ocean, when it becomes stormy, is terribly intolerable. And in his old age and ill health, there was terrible storms, rains, big waves, seasickness. For any of you who have ever experienced seasickness, you just
cannot tolerate living. It's just an all-pervading misery. One time I was in Hawaii with one of my godbrothers, and he had this famous boat. It said Hare Krishna on the sail. It was a sailboat. There were movies about this boat that we used to show in all the temples in ISKCON some years ago. The Hare Krishna sailboat. Have you seen that movie? And he's having kirtan and a Prabhupada Didi and everything in the boat. So anyways, this devotee was having difficulties, so some of the leaders of the movement asked me to go to try to preach to this devotee. So it was my first time in Hawaii, which is considered to be the most beautiful place on earth. Prabhupada said it is actually a heavenly planet which has descended to the earth. And usually when devotees leave Krishna consciousness in the West, they usually go to Hawaii. Because if they're not going to be performing tapasya, they might as well go to the best place to enjoy. So anyways, New Vrindavan is just the opposite. It's a place of great tapasya, especially in the winter. So I went to Hawaii, and I was all around with fragrant flower smells that were very intoxicating. Jasmines, night queens, very sweet. And you don't even have to buy food. You just go into the rainforest and there's guavas and mangoes and just fruits growing wild. You just eat very nicely. Anyways, I was observing what is Hawaii. And then my godbrother said, "Why don't you come and I will give you a ride on my boat?" And I said, "Oh, yes, yes, definitely. Now I will experience the ultimate joy of life, because of material life anyway." The water was all crystal clear, not like the ocean here. The ocean here is like, it's like a gigantic toilet that that has had clogged drains for the last 10 years, so it hasn't been flushed in 10 years. But there it's absolutely crystal clear. You can just see. You can go way out and just see fishes and everything swimming and see the colorful rocks in the bottom. Very nice. Shiny. Sweet. So we went out in the boat. Such a beautiful boat. And then I got seasick. And I was in utter misery. You can't imagine. Have any of you been seasick before? It's unbelievable. You just, every time the boat moves when you're seasick with the waves, it's just a wave of rawr. And at the time I was only in my 30s, young man. And it was so unbearable that even though where we were sailing there were sharks, because Hawaii is shark-infested when you get out deep. And we were quite deep. And we actually could see sharks from time to time. But the seasickness was so unbearable that I just said, "I can't stay in this boat." So I jumped in the water. And I took a long time, but I swam back to the shore. Anyways, Prabhupada was 70 years old. And it wasn't just some waves, it was a massive storm. And he wrote in his diary, seasickness. Then after the seasickness, heart attacks. He couldn't even write. If you see in his diary, during those days where he kept a very, very meticulous record of everything he did each day, during those days of his intense seasickness and heart attack, There was just one scribbled, one line, which was not even a straight line, that just was going down through each day. Seasickness, heart pains, and then days of just like that. Couldn't even write, couldn't even hold his pen. And yet the storms were going on, and the waves were pushing him up and down and up and down. And he realized that he had no hope of life. He explained that in this condition, his only solace was Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, hearing the glorious pastimes of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then, at the time when he was actually about to give up hope of life, Krishna appeared to him on a boat. And on that boat was not only Lord Sri Krishna, but various incarnations of Sri Krishna all together. And Krishna, through this very beautiful darshan, assured Prabhupada that I'm taking command of this ship and I will protect you. And immediately after that beautiful vision, the storm ended and there was hardly a single wave of any substance the whole rest of the way to America. Because if there was, he could not have survived. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada told us this beautiful story in his great humility, knowing that Krishna is our protector, that Krishna is our savior, that Krishna is our all in all. Kaunteya pratijanehi name bhakta pranashyati. Krishna's promise is that he will always protect his devotee. And without Krishna, there is no life. Queen Kunti, in this mood of imminent separation, is explaining in this way. As the name and fame of a particular body is finished with the disappearance of the living spirit, similarly, if you do not look upon us, all our fame and activities, along with the Pandavas and Yadus, will end at once. Krishna has so lovingly appeared within his name. Krishna has so lovingly appeared within the beautiful form of Sri Radha Gopinath. And he's appearing so wonderfully through the association of his devotees. This is our life. This is our all in all. And to the degree we have this conviction, to this degree, we will be Krishna conscious. If we seek Krishna as our only refuge, Krishna will reveal himself in truth as our only refuge. If we seek refuge in anything or anyone else, Krishna will hide himself from us. Is there any questions?
Maharaj, Queen Kunti is realizing that without Krishna, as she is praying, that it's like a body without life. She realizes much in the beginning, and she did not have that much intimate association with Krishna. Arjuna was always with Krishna, but he realized it so much at the end when Krishna left this planet. That intensity, was it the same?
These are such exalted devotees, Kunti, Arjuna. By their prayers, by their activities, we can understand the intensity of how they loved and depended on Krishna at every moment. In substance, it is the same.
Yes. Lord Chaitanya is saying that because I heard something about the materialistic talks and I am not able to get the blissful transcendental Krishna consciousness, a little bit of this materialistic talk heard by Supreme Personality of Godhead, he could not maintain his Krishna consciousness. Of course it could be other way around also, but talking about that pastime, if you compare with ourselves, practically for the whole day we are just hearing about all materialistic talk itself. Then when Lord Chaitanya himself says he could not maintain his Krishna consciousness, then what about we then? So how we can relate that thing with our life itself?
When I told the story, I was quite aware that you would ask this question. But still, I told it anyway. The more we become Krishna conscious, the more we realize that any second in forgetfulness of Krishna is unbearable. It was because he was so supremely advanced that he was revealing this type of transcendental ecstasy of separation. If you were so advanced, you probably would not be able to work in the stock market. You would certainly die in your office. But you are not so advanced. So you have to follow the recommended process by which you can become so advanced. And that's by following in the footsteps of such of the great personality of God, of the great personalities, and also by taking their instructions as our life and soul. By following the proper process, we can gradually come to that standard of such love for Krishna that we cannot live forgetting him for a second. That we cannot tolerate associating with anyone or anything that is not helping us to remember Krishna. And this particular instruction for you in the Grihastha Ashram is to have very, very strong, pure sadhana, have very loving, intimate relationships with Vaishnavas, utilize the fruits of your activities and your occupation to serve the mission of Lord Chaitanya. And in this way, gradually you will come to that platform. But you cannot imitate the great souls. You must simply follow their teachings. But Lord Chaitanya also wanted to explain to us through this example how much cautious we must be to not fall into the trap of entering into materialistic relationships. In preaching and in doing our duties, sometimes materialistic people are there, but we should never fall into their state of consciousness. We should never relate to them on their level. Because if we do, it's worse than death. If we do, we will certainly forget Krishna. In fact, if we do, Krishna will leave us. Leave us means he will hide from our consciousness. Niskinjana syad bhagavad bhajano mukasya param param jigamasora bhavasagarasya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has prayed that if one is desirous to cross over this ocean of material existence, one should know that associating with people too much attached to material life is worse than drinking poison willingly. But associating means actually entering into enjoyment of what they do and what they like. Sometimes we have to deal with them, but we must see it as a tapasya. We should not in any way develop a spirit of taste for those things or enjoyment for those things. It is simply a tapasya. To fulfill a particular purpose in my service, I will do. But there's nothing beyond that. We should be crying out for Krishna, so please save me, please protect me. Just like one of our devotees was telling me that she was in a situation where she was, due to social pressures, forced to be so much engrossed with materialistic people, engaging in so much materialistic festivities and socializations, and everyone was enjoying. She was utterly miserable. This is very good. She was actually experiencing that as soon as we start to consort and flirt with material energy, then our Krishna consciousness is removed. And without that, we have no life.
Just now you mentioned in lecture that the greatest dishonor is that when you are not honest. In Kali Yuga, it's always there. People don't value the words. But you know, as devotees, that when we have to associate with these materialistic persons, in the neophyte stage, we always get carried away by their ways of living, the style of living, their activities and everything. So sometimes we do want to avoid such social gatherings, invitations and all those. And then when asked for a reason, we have to tell a lie. We are not honest to ourselves. We know that we are not truly speaking. But then at the same time, it hurts us saying that we sometimes dishonest. We have to say that some devotees had come to our house, or I had some function in the temple, like that. How do you really practically go about it?
What we were speaking of in regard to Karna was he gave his oath, he gave his vow, he gave his word. To go back on your word is a great offense, even if it means your life. And as far as we're concerned, when we give our word to someone in Krishna consciousness especially, or to speak of vows and initiation, we have to take it very seriously. What these vows mean, what we're vowing. To break a vow before God is very, very inconceivable. Srila Prabhupada could not even calculate how people could do this, although he saw them doing it. I remember at New Vrindavan, 1976, Srila Prabhupada each night was giving wonderful darshans for several hours, sitting in a garden under trees with grass all around him. Beautiful Vyasa-san. And one devotee, one of my godbrothers, asked, Srila Prabhupada, what if after initiation you fall down? Srila Prabhupada wouldn't even hear such a thing. He said, what is this? Fall down? What are you talking about? How can you even think about such a thing? It's impossible. What are you talking? He said, you have made your vow before God, the deity. You have made your vow before all the Vaishnavas. You have made your vow before Guru. You have made your vow before the sacred fire. There's no question of breaking that vow. It's unmentionable. He said, no gentleman will go back on his promise. That was his answer. But yet, our tendency is to take things so cheaply. We have made our vow, a vow of chanting every day, a vow of following the regulative principles, and mostly a vow of dedication to Guru. It's not just that we chant 16 rounds and follow the four regulative principles, but also it's a vow of utter dedication to Guru. That's what initiation means, taking those vows. It's not a question that maybe I will and maybe I won't. You must. So this is what we're discussing. That Karna, when he gave his word, he would not go back. When you give your word to a Vaishnav, when you give your word before God, you cannot go back. Of course, Karna gave his word to Duryodhana. So we don't accept that such a spiritual matter. But still, from the point of view of Kshatriya, he gave his word to the king. And the king is supposed to be the representative of God. So in one sense, he did give his word to God, because he gave to his representative. At least he was supposed to be his representative. But as far as to avoid falling into Maya by associating in very materialistic ways with very materialistic people, and trying not to utterly offend them, and speaking something to protect your spiritual life, that is not really a lie. We should not even consider that a lie. We should just consider that a necessity of life. Otherwise, you just offend them. And what is the use of offending them? As far as possible, you should be utterly simplistic and straightforward. As far as possible. That is the best thing. You just tell them that this is Maya. I don't like. I only like Krishna. That is the best thing. Just be simple, straightforward, honest, and preach. That is ideal. But if somehow or other we don't have the heart to do that, then better to say something than to... In other words, it's lesser of two evils. Because by engrossing yourself in materialistic life, that's also a lie. That's a bigger lie. Prabhupada used the example that sometimes if there's a thorn in your foot, you use another thorn to get it out. So sometimes to protect ourselves from untruths, we have to use a little bit of an untruth. So we don't take it seriously. But ideally, we should never tell anything that is not true for our own sense gratification. That is a great offense. If you say something untrue to someone for your own sense gratification, if you say something untrue to someone to protect your own prestige, that is a great offense. But if you very reluctantly say something just to protect your spiritual life, just to survive, then we don't recommend it, but it's not so bad. We recommend just be straightforward, just be simple, just tell them in a nice way that I will be reading Bhagavad Gita tonight, or I will be going to the temple tonight because I'm just not interested in these materialistic affairs. But you may break their hearts. And if their hearts breaking is actually an impediment for their appreciating Krishna consciousness, then you can say whatever is, will best serve Krishna in that sense. Does Karna know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Yes. He saw that when in Duryodhana's assembly, Krishna revealed the Virat Rup before all of them. But still, Duryodhana also knew he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dhritarashtra also. But their knowing was not really knowing. They had some theoretical conception, but they couldn't appreciate it because they had no devotion. They did not have the right type of devotion. Hiranyakashipu also knew that Narsingadeva was the Supreme Personality of God. But still, he had no appreciation. He still was under the illusion that he could kill him. So they had some sense of knowledge, but they did not have realization. And therefore, they were covered by Maya. Yes? We really don't call any of them demons. They were all great souls playing a part in Krishna's lila. If it wasn't for Duryodhana, there would be no Bhagavad Gita. So we should offer our respectful obeisances at his lotus feet. But at the same time, there was no Duryodhana. Every Wednesday night, Devamrita would have nothing to talk about. Oh, we should.
Names like...
From relative terms, because of Karna was actually a great soul. But because of his association with Duryodhana, who was envious, he became envious. Even a great soul, if you do associate with people who are materialistic, you become materialistic. Duryodhana was very envious of the Pandavas, and because of Karna's associating with him, although he was actually a Pandava, Karna was one of the Pandavas. In fact, he was the eldest of the Pandavas. He was senior to Yudhisthira. That was his birthright. His father was Surya, and his mother was Kunti. What type of a disposition he had. And that disposition was manifesting in so many wonderful ways. He was such a virtuous person, such an honest person, such a great heroic person. He had all good qualities. But he became attached to the association of someone who was envious. And due to that association, he became equally envious. He was just as envious as Duryodhana. That is the power of what bad association can do to a good person. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.